Totally Football Show. Good Lord, it's hot. The sun is in full effect in London, but this time it's not Heung-min making us suffer. It's the nearly perfectly spherical hot ball of burning plasma in the sky, which has us praying for Claudio Reyna. Anyway, heatwave or no heatwave, your TFS team will stop at nothing to bring you bang up to speed with all the latest happenings in the wide, wide world of football. Tabloid headline writers rejoice as Newcastle smash transfer record to get Joel in tune. Ampadu pushing off to Germany. Some other players have moved clubs, and it's absolutely massive news. And some haven't, but they might. And frankly, that's more than enough to make it into a pre-season pod in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. I'm Matt Davis-Adams, and yet they keep inviting me back. In the studio with me today, it's the whole hunk, or Hulk, if you will, Italian football expert James Horncastle. James, this is textbook gelato weather. As a man who frequents Italy regularly, what is your go-to ice cream? What would you recommend for these kind of conditions?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Sorbetto?
Or a granita. That would be very good. I would probably go with stracciatella, which is kind of like vanilla chocolate, kind of chippy kind of thing. Pistachio for our English listeners, always very nice. I'm a big fan on the kind of coffee kind of stuff as well, fior di latte, something like that. There's some very good places just near our new studio in Soho. Go to Gelupo, for example. They do some good ice cream.
I think we will, James.
I think we most definitely will.
I'm very hungry now.
The other voice you can hear there is the Bavarian Brainiac, all the way from Germany at one point in time, now all the way from like 15 minutes down the road, or given the weather, should that be down the roast? No, wait, road is correct. Hello, Raphael Honigstein.
It's way too early for roasting jokes.
Your ice cream of choice, I'm guessing it's nut-based.
It is. How did you guess?
I don't know. I just see you as a kind of crushed nuts kind of guy on an ice cream.
Hazelnut.
All right.
Yeah. Nocciola.
Okay.
Yeah. Nocciola.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
What about you, Matt?
I'd always go for two scoops, one fruit, and then one like chocolate. So the fruit's like the palate cleanser at the end after you've had the nice chocolate.
Good lemon sorbet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Goes a long way.
Cream on top?
Yeah.
Bit of panna?
Absolutely.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
No? When it's good, Raph, it's good.
No.
Come on.
No.
Options, that's the main thing. Mercifully, the new season is getting ever closer. It's been literally days since the last one finished, so we better get into today's big-ish news. Yo, Abby, hit the sting.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Now then, Gareth Bale, you remember him, loves golf, hates integrating himself into the culture and lifestyle of a country in which he's lived for 5 years. Anyway, Zinedine Zidane doesn't have a personal problem with Bale. He just wants him to get as far away from Madrid as possible immediately. Bale making that as awkward as he can by not taking the hint / scoring against Arsenal in America this week. For more on this situation, producer Abby caught up with our Spanish football expert, Alvaro Romeo.
So Alvaro, bring us up to date. What is the latest from Spain on Gareth Bale?
Well, there has been no new development since Jonathan Barnett said last Tuesday that Gareth Bale will not go on loan anywhere. Gareth Bale didn't start in the friendly game against Arsenal last Tuesday night, but he played the full second half, which is a progress in the Zinedine Zidane-Gareth Bale relationship, as he didn't play a single minute against Bayern on Saturday night. In fact, Zinedine Zidane said on Tuesday that Gareth Bale denied to put his football kit before the Bayern Munich game. Well, that's a different story. Well, the truth is that Zinedine Zidane wants the player out, and as much as he blamed his bad Spanish when he said, "I want him out, and if it is tomorrow, that would be better," the truth is that Zidane doesn't consider Gareth Bale as a key player of his squad. So I believe that as soon as Real Madrid receives a satisfactory offer for the player, and an offer that Gareth Bale and Real Madrid will accept, then the player will leave very quickly, because Zinedine Zidane and Real Madrid wants to move on and to prepare the season. Let's don't forget one thing now, that the Chinese market closes in a week and the Premier League transfer window closes in about 16 days too. So the time goes against Zidane, definitely. But I am not too sure if time goes against Gareth Bale, especially if his intention is staying at Madrid, despite not being the manager's favourite.
Arsenal have just signed Dani Ceballos on loan, so why have Zidane let him go with Asensio injured, and what kind of player is he?
I think that Zinedine Zidane likes Dani Ceballos, but he doesn't consider him a pivotal player of Real Madrid yet. They are getting a really good player, a player who is a good playmaker, who's got a lot of endurance and the ability to take on players and scoring from set pieces. The problem with Dani Ceballos at Real Madrid has been Real Madrid's irregularity and inconsistency over the last 2 years. Dani Ceballos has had 3 coaches in 2 years in a crucial stage for the player's development, which is the stage from the player being 20 years old until he is 22, 23 years old. So I believe that Dani Ceballos has a great opportunity. Ahead of him, Arsenal is lacking a lot of finesse in their midfield, and Dani Ceballos is going to make a really good contribution to Arsenal, I believe, and especially because Unai Emery likes the player as well, and he was personally asking for the player. There are some managers that really like Dani Ceballos. Zinedine Zidane, for example, never trusted him a lot, but Luis Enrique, the Spanish national coach until last June, loved him to the point that despite Ceballos not being playing for Real Madrid, Luis Enrique was still capping him for the Spanish national team. He's a good player, and I believe that Dani Ceballos is going to improve Arsenal's quality in midfield.
Alvaro Romeo of TalkSport International there. What do we think, gents? Rafa, is this just a game of brinkmanship? And if so, who's going to win it, Bale and Barnett or Zidane and Perez?
I think Bale's going to win this argument. There's very little a club can do to get rid of a player who does not want to leave and is in a bracket where it's very, very difficult to move him on, to even put him on loan, and he flat out refuses. It's not unlike the Mesut Ozil situation, with the perhaps difference that Real Madrid and Zidane, certainly Zidane, seems to be more determined to get rid of him. I think Florentino Perez, from what I can understand, is slightly concerned and would like to see a slightly more conciliatory tone being adopted by Zidane, but Zidane seems to have made up his mind that Bale is a negative influence, doesn't fit in and needs to move on. Now, of course, he can be frozen out, but you can't actually physically get rid of him unless he agrees. So I think it'd be very, very difficult for Real Madrid to move him on.
We hear about PSG and we hear about China and maybe even Spurs too. Is anybody in Italy remotely interested in taking him on whatever basis?
I think the financials of doing this deal, unless Real Madrid makes some sacrifices and compromise, it's very difficult. Ultimately, it's their fault, because if you give a player a long-term contract, he's still got 3 years left on his deal. He's earning, what, 70 million euro a year net. I think that's excluding bonuses as well. I think a lot of top clubs around Europe are finding themselves in the same position, where they've often tied themselves to players, big fees, big contracts. And whether it comes to a player reaching the end of his cycle or they want to move that player on, it's proving very difficult. And I think this is part of the problem of the inflation we've seen in the transfer market, where these super clubs can maybe afford to sign these players, but when they need to move them on, the others can't. So they're kind of lumbered with this asset.
We've had a tweet which I was going to save for later when we were talking about Harry Maguire, but it seems pertinent now, from that red-haired dude who says, with Zaha and Maguire potentially costing 75 million plus, do you think we'll start to see players insist on shorter contracts, 2-year deals for example, so they can prevent clubs from charging high fees? That was something that would seem to work for Gareth Bale in this situation, but it's not realistic that clubs would ever accept that generally.
Look, Gareth Bale does not like a short deal. He wants to have a long deal. A player wants to have the security to be being paid. And clubs usually want the time to amortize the transfer fee. So not everyone knows this, but let's say you buy a player for £50 million for 5 years. On the books, those £50 million will show up as a £10 million hit every year. So by the time those 5 years are up, the player has fully amortized his transfer fee. And basically then, if you sell him on, that's a profit. Now, the shorter the contract is, the less time you have to write off that transfer fee. So it's almost impossible for a club, let alone the knock-on effect of not having any resale value, but just to write off £75 million over 2 years is a massive financial hit. Nobody wants to do that. So there are reasons on both sides why long contracts make sense. But of course, they shouldn't be given, I think, to players who approach their 30s, who have injury problems, who are perhaps not motivated enough to really seek new challenges. I think it's a completely different dynamic if you are, let's say, an important player for your national team and you have to be playing in the club. And if you are not involved, then you are fearful of missing out on the World Cup or on the Euros. Then the clubs who want to get rid of you, they have a bit of leverage. They can say, okay, you don't want to play, you know, we will help you, but you have to move on. But when it comes to some of the players we talked about, they have no incentive to move towards the end of the contract, and very few demand. There's almost no market for them. So I don't see that ever being a realistic possibility. The only players who would accept short contracts are the ones who have to, because they're very young and you know, there isn't that much of a market for them. But for established players, it's not going to happen.
Also, I think it's interesting with Madrid, where they've sent players out on loan, Galactico players, hoping that the team that loans them will stump up and pay money.
James Rodriguez.
James being the main case in point, who's been on loan for 2 years now. And they've seen with James that, you know, Bayern haven't essentially ponied up. They've returned him to sender. And I suppose, yeah, there is an urgency for them to bring in money, given the amount that they've spent and what they want to do in what remains of the market. But again, with Bale, I think that is another stumbling block in terms of, like, well, if we send him out on loan for a year or two, are we going to get a guarantee from that club that they're going to sign him? And I think that's not going to happen.
Well, one team who aren't going to be signing Gareth Bale this summer are Chelsea. I had the call for their magnificent triumph in the Rakuten Cup on Tuesday. Frankie's fellas, does that work as a moniker for them? No, I'm going to plough on.
It's a shame that they didn't go to LA for their tour, because it could have been Frankie goes to Hollywood.
Oh, but, yes. Yeah. Very well. Instead, that's next year's pre-season tour.
Fantastic.
Nailed on. So they picked up their first piece of silverware under the new boss, the prestigious trophy, returning to Cobham with the squad after they beat Barcelona 2-1 at the Saitama Stadium. Tammy Abraham, Ross Barkley, who's looked really good so far in pre-season, got the goals. Ivan Rakitic hit a beaut in stoppage time to halve the deficit. Listener James Check pointing out that my commentary of his goal made it onto Rakitic's Instagram story, which is something I'm very excited about, and stick around till the end of the pod, you'll find out why. It was Barca's first pre-season game, Chelsea's fourth. You could tell the difference in terms of the fitness, but definitely some reasons for Chelsea supporters to be positive. Tammy Abraham taking his goal well. Christian Pulisic looking good in flashes. Some news lines coming out of Stamford Bridge this week. Raf, Ethan Ampadu going to RB Leipzig for this season. Maybe shades of Andreas Christensen here going to Gladbach, team playing in the Champions League. Christensen won Player of the Year, I think, for Gladbach as well, didn't he? Came back and was seen as first team ready. How's
yeah,
that move
gone? Especially
by Sarri. Yeah, quite. How's Ampadu going to Leipzig gone down in Germany?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. He's certainly created a bit of a wave in the slipstream of Jadon Sancho and Reece Nelson, and even all the hype that surrounded the failed move, as it looks, for Callum Hudson-Odoi from Bayern. So there's perhaps slightly more attention and excitement than otherwise would have been for a young player coming over from the Premier League. But Leipzig have real quality. They have depth as well in his position. If you see him as a central midfielder, first and foremost, you have Tyler Adams, for example, who's come in January and he's done absolutely tremendously well for Leipzig. US international, one of the best players really for Leipzig in the second half of the season. But I guess what they've told him is, with us being in the Champions League and with Nagelsmann's tendency to switch a lot and to almost play two teams in both competitions, there will be enough space for him. There will be enough game time for him. And I think what is smart on his behalf is that he would have hopefully been advised and seen that Nagelsmann has a habit of coaching and really making players better. I mean, Serge Gnabry, for example, credits Nagelsmann for all the improvement that he's made.
Not Tony Pulis.
He was a lost player who really had to resurrect his career, and Nagelsmann came along and really made a huge difference for him.
I think Ampadu, as you say, we were playing in midfield. He played
not right back.
Yeah, he played. Oh, bless him! He had to play right back one game last season. It was difficult, but I think there must have been some assurances that he will play more games than he doesn't, because the reason he's not staying at Chelsea is because he hasn't had a full season because of fitness issues that he's had over the last couple of years, and that's why they're sending him out. So you'll assume he'd be playing more often than not. If he is, James, he'd be playing with Ademola Lookman, who this morning has confirmed his move to RB Leipzig. For Lookman, this is an upgrade, isn't it? He's going to the third best team in Germany, and he'll be playing in the Champions League next season.
It's understandable given how successful certain players have been, but we're seeing it more and more in this window, and it's not just limited to players of a young age who are developing. You look at Kieran Trippier going to Atletico Madrid, for example, that English players finally kind of appreciating that the world is very small and they don't have to limit their development or their playing time to the Premier League. So, yeah, I think, again, a reason to watch the Bundesliga, Raf.
One of many.
One player who doesn't look like he'll be there is Callum Hudson-Odoi, who's either signing or has signed a 100 grand a week contract to stay at Chelsea. Bayern, no doubt, will say that's because of the player's injury. Is that what you believe to be the reason?
No, it's got nothing to do with the injury. Bayern, we're still committed to make this happen. And it was reported and not really denied vociferously that he even had sort of a medical or at least some kind of assessment in Germany by the famous doctor Müller Wohlfahrt, who looks after everyone, including Usain Bolt, etc.
Pep loves him.
Pep does not love him, for those who might take James at face value, which you rarely should do. It's really an embarrassment for Bayern, first and foremost, because they were trying to do what Dortmund do so well, which is to take a player that's a little bit under the radar, who perhaps for whatever reason doesn't quite get the game time they deserve, and get in ahead of his big jump up in development. And then, you know, you buy a player for 30, 40, and suddenly after a season or two, he's worth double. That was the idea. And they were so afraid after missing out on Jadon Sancho, who had an offer from Bayern but chose Dortmund, that they would miss out on the next big English young player, that they really pushed this. But they did it in a very clumsy way. As you know, they started talking about him. They thought this would help make the move come to fruition. This would perhaps increase the pressure on Chelsea to sell. But I think they misjudged completely Chelsea's reaction and the sensitivity to the crowd and to the fans and to the idea that, you know, there's another English player leaving and they're bringing Christian Pulisic at the same time. How does that sit with Chelsea? How does that sit with what the Premier League do when it comes to young English players? So from his point of view, you have to say he played it beautifully. He managed to leverage Bayern's interest, put pressure on Sarri, and now will find himself with a much improved deal, which otherwise probably wouldn't have been on the table to that extent, because he refused to sign a new contract, I think, a year ago, which can't have been nearly as good as the one that is now ready to be signed or has already been signed. So I think for Chelsea, it's great news.
And from a Chelsea perspective, James, considering they've got a transfer ban, we yet see how these players will do next season, but they signed up Mason Mount, Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Hudson-Odoi, and they managed to bring in Kovacic, and they've got Pulisic. It's not a bad summer for a team who can't sign any players.
Yeah, I think they've done pretty well. I mean, there was a time when it didn't look like they were going to be able to retain Hudson-Odoi. I think a lot of those young players who perhaps in the past, and even under Sarri, question whether they had the future that they wanted at Chelsea have had their minds changed by the appointment that Chelsea have made with Frank Lampard, experience of playing under Frank Lampard in some of the cases. And it's a real opportunity for these guys. You know, we saw Spurs weren't acting under a transfer ban last summer, but sometimes it can be really good for a group, for a team, to have little or no change and a lot of stability and a lot of time to work under a manager who has, well, clearly in Lampard's case, a lot of faith in these players. So I think it's actually turned out pretty well.
I'd be very excited about Michy Batshuayi returning. I think he's completely underrated. And if he rediscovers his touch and if he has players that play a little bit for him rather than trying to score themselves, which has been sort of you don't know where cause and effect can be separated, but that's been a Chelsea issue in recent years. The goals have come often from wide positions from midfield. Is it because the striker's not good enough, or is it because, you know, that's how the players in those positions, they tend to cut inside rather than look for the assist, etc. But I think he's a wonderful player, and if there's some kind of useful job share going on, I see Chelsea scoring enough goals. And of course, the beauty, in inverted commas, you might have some short-term pain in the transfer market, but if you consider that you can keep those 100 million, maybe 120 million pounds that you otherwise would have spent, and then go and spend 250 next year, that'll probably make Chelsea one of the most powerful and most exciting buyers in the market.
Yeah, be interesting to see. They finish with Batshuayi and Giroud playing together against Barcelona, but they've mainly been playing 4-2-3-1 other than that. Another player who's been linked with Chelsea, but mainly with Bayern, Rafa, is the Leverkusen midfielder Kai Havertz. Andrew Turner asking what's going to happen with him in the next 12 months.
It's super interesting with Kai Havertz because everyone expected Bayern to make a big move for him, or at least kind of set the wheels in motion to get the move done for next year. Now they have, of course, as you'd expect them, have had lots of talks with his people. They're trying to convince him, you know, Bayern is the right place for us. But because of their other issues, which we have touched upon and maybe we'll go into a bit more detail later on, it hasn't been a priority for them to sign that kind of player. They need wide players. They needed new defenders. They are still looking for a holding midfielder of some sort. So he's not been a priority for him. And I think there is perhaps, talking to people around him, there's perhaps a slight sense of disappointment that Bayern haven't pushed harder for him. And I think Bayern should not be too presumptuous that it's the natural destination for him. The Chelsea link is real to the extent, I think, that Chelsea, before the transfer ban kicked in, were keeping very close tabs on him, were talking to people close to the situation. And I think they were thinking, you know, is Sarri potentially the right man for us? Of course, things have changed quite drastically since then. And we have to see what happens, you know, when it comes a little bit closer. But I think that not just Chelsea, but a number of Premier League teams who are willing to spend big, and we're talking about 100 million euros here for next summer, should not be put off by a sense that this is a foregone conclusion that he will go to Bayern. Because as far as I understand, the players is far more open than perhaps people expect them to be.
All right, and while we're talking players going from Germany to England, shock horror, Newcastle United have signed a striker for a club record £40 million. Joel Linton, they needed replacements for Rondon, Perez and Hossolu. Is Joel Linton how you pronounce his name firstly?
Joel Linton, yeah. I mean, I'm not Brazilian, Bavarian.
Joel Linton.
Yeah, something like that. I hesitate to go through the kind of ethnic stereotypes of describing him as big and powerful and strong.
But you're going to go there anyway,
right? But it's impossible to not say that he is physically a very imposing centre forward.
So he's like a Rondon replacement then.
That is part of his game. Yeah, very similar. Similar type of player. He can play wide in a sort of a wide striker role. A little bit like Mandzukic, for example, played in the past quite effectively, or even De Kuyt, although he's maybe more prolific and more of a real centre forward than him. But he can have that versatility, I think. What he hasn't been so far is been entirely consistent when it comes to goal scoring. I looked at his numbers this morning. It's 7 goals he scored last season, which was sort of his breakthrough season. And that equates to about 1 goal for every 300 minutes. So he needs to improve. He needs to get better service, perhaps. And this was in a very pretty good Hoffenheim team. So one or two question marks. Well, exactly. And what I would add is that the price and the excitement, I think, is partly a function of his age, because he is only 22. I think there's a reasonable assumption that, especially as a centre forward, he will improve with the experience. He will benefit from being perhaps the main focal point of attack. At Hoffenheim, they would often change things around. Sometimes they would play with 3 strikers, sometimes with only 1. He, because of his versatility, I think that sometimes worked against him a little bit, because he was playing in different positions, even though he was normally often a centre forward. He would then drop deep sometimes, the second striker, go into the channels. I think if you make him more sort of the main man, the guy that you want to feed, we will see more goals of him.
Right, don't go too far, or if you do, make sure you've got headphones in. We'll be talking Ronaldo, Lukaku, Man City and more once we've fulfilled our contractual commercial obligations.
Paddy Power knows the very best way to sponsor a team is by unsponsoring them. That's why we're launching the Save Our Shirt campaign, and that's why Huddersfield Town's kit won't have our logo on it at all. Don't you wish we weren't on your shirt? Paddy Power, save our shirt.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
It's the Totally Football Show with me, Matt Davis-Adams, James Horncastle and Rafa Honigstein. Now then, Romelu Lukaku, Inter Milan, James Horncastle, how serious is this match made in heaven?
It's very serious. Essentially, Lukaku changed representation earlier in the year. That representation was all kind of set up to market him to Italy and get him to Italy. Agent involved has very good ties with Inter Milan. Number of players there, been an intermediary in some of the other deals. So, you know, Raf probably knows more about Valentin Lazzaro, the Hertha Berlin fullback, wingback who has moved to Inter this summer. You know, we already saw back in April, Lukaku having a big sit down with Sky Italia to basically say how it always been always a dream of his to go and play in Italy one day, and wouldn't that be great? So Inter are very serious. Antonio Conte is very serious about signing him. He obviously wanted to sign him when he was at Chelsea, was unable to do that then. it looks very difficult for them to get this deal done, even though the player wants to go, Inter wants him, because Manchester United so far, their valuation of the player is markedly different from Inter's. United want around 83 million for him, which is more or less exactly what they paid Everton for him, if not a little bit more, whereas Inter have offered around 54 million with some add-ons to that. And I think there's a real feeling that they can't go any higher at this moment in time. Now, the interesting thing here is that Inter have got a couple of players that they, well, at least a couple of players that they'd like to move on. The player that Lukaku would be replacing, Mario Icardi, that has been very difficult. No one's gone near Icardi so far. Ragnar Ingelan as well, he's not part of Antonio Conte's project. And the club have come out and basically said this, which has obviously had an impact on those players' values, in that, you know, everyone knows they're up for sale, everyone knows that Inter need to get rid of them. And so I don't think there's been official offers for either of them at the moment, but you could understand clubs lowballing Inter for them, saying, well, if you really want to get rid of them, we'll take him off your hands for this amount. And so that has left Lukaku kind of stranded at United, injured with an ankle problem. He wants to go, and he wants to go to Inter, but at the moment it looks like it's going to be very difficult to get that deal done.
Is a loan with an option to buy an option?
So that has been what Inter have put to United. I think it's a couple of weeks ago now, but their director of sport basically came over here, met his counterparts at United at their offices in London. And yeah,
United have a director of sport?
No, United don't. They've got a chief executive, but Inter do. But yeah, I think they're still looking for them. That was the brief when I was in Singapore. Still looking for a technical director. But yeah, Inter can only do this deal by loan for 2 or 3 years and stagger payments that way. And obviously a lot of bonuses, some easy for him to achieve, some difficult for him to achieve. But United standing firm, and I think they're standing firm in part because they also want to bring that kind of money in so they can maybe spend what Leicester want for a certain Harry Maguire as well, because I think they know that City are interested in Maguire as well. So it's an impasse is what we're looking at.
But it's one thing standing firm if there are other clubs interested in the player, but there doesn't seem to be, does there? There's only Inter really, really in for Lukaku. So can they not just, is this me being ridiculously logical, which doesn't work in football, say we'll give you the 50 million plus Nainggolan and then everybody's happy?
Look, I mean, I wonder if something will change between now and the end of the English transfer window in August 8th, because if United want to use some of the money for another player, then this deal needs to happen. But Inter kind of having to consider other targets, although Antonio Conte, you know, there is only one player that he wants for that position, and that is Lukaku alongside Edin Dzeko, the other player that Inter are looking to sign for, because they're going to be playing with two up front next year. So I think this is, at the moment, a bit of brinksmanship. I wouldn't be surprised if United are attempting to, again, show off how good they are when it comes to negotiating these kind of sales, you know, in terms of look how much money we were able to get for a player who ended up being on the margins and no longer part of the project. You look, we're excellent in the commercial department. We're excellent when it comes to bringing in money this way as well. But I think something's got to give. And I think Inter are hoping that United climb down.
Any other Italian transfers or potential transfers we should be paying attention to? And we've seen Higuain playing for Juventus in pre-season. Is that just to keep him relatively fit, or because he's actually going to play next season?
That was amazing. I was in Singapore for to cover Juventus and Inter whilst they were out there. Higuain, he believes he has a future at Juventus. He wants to persuade the manager who... Yeah, if Maurizio Sarri was asked to choose a striker, he would probably always choose Gonzalo Higuain because of the year that they had together at Napoli. And that's encouraged Higuain to just like, if I give everything in training, if I score goals in these friendlies, I'll get to stick around. The club have a complete different idea on this. And it was really interesting. I went out early to watch some of the warm-ups before Juventus' game against Spurs. And there was Higuain supposed to go on the walk around with the rest of the team, instead on the sidelines with Juventus's sporting director Fabio Paratici, where Paratici was quite animated talking to him in front of everyone for about 10 or 15 minutes. Don't know what they were talking about, but you can surmise it was probably like, come on, Gonzalo, just go to Roma, go somewhere, please, just, you know. But in the end, Higuain that day not only scored a goal, but he wore the captain's armband as well. But the club's position hasn't changed on that. They want to get his wages off the payroll. And, you know, I think it's been complicated because you can see Higuain's gone from being a guy who broke a record in Italy that stood for 50 years, well, more than that, a single-season scoring record, moves to Juventus for 90 million, highest paid player in the league. They sign Ronaldo, move him on to Milan. Milan, after 5 months, decide, oh, it's too expensive and it's not going very well. Goes to Chelsea to work on the Sarri, doesn't work out. And now a lot of other clubs, apart from Roma really, are kind of like, well, we think he's a shadow of the player that he was a couple of years ago. Yeah, he finds himself in a bit of a complicated situation. I think he's probably going to have to accept, Roma's a massive club, going to Roma.
And while we're talking about Italian football, we should discuss the latest development in the Cristiano Ronaldo case, and it's that the Juventus and Portugal star will not face any sexual assault charges. Las Vegas prosecutors released a statement saying, based upon a review of information at this time, the allegations of sexual assault against Cristiano Ronaldo cannot be proved beyond reasonable doubt. Therefore, no charges will be forthcoming. It was the German publication Der Spiegel that first released the story back in 2018. I guess the first question is, what happens now? Is this the end of it, Rafa?
I don't think so. There's still a chance that a civil lawsuit that is being pursued by Catherine Morgan against Cristiano Ronaldo has a chance of succeeding. In civil court, you only have to prove on the balance of probabilities, i.e. 51% and 49%, that the accusation is true, whereas I think Las Vegas police had very little option but to let this one go, simply saying that we will not be in a position to convince a jury, as from the prosecutor's point of view, that there is no doubt whatsoever on her version of events, simply because I think there is not enough corroborating evidence to say there is no doubt and this can be proven beyond reasonable doubt. Now, I would encourage everyone to read the original stories that the Spiegel did to see really her very in-depth version of events. And I think it's a very, very difficult situation to handle for everyone involved. As an employer, you want to back your employee, especially if he has not been proven guilty in court. At the same time, I think if a normal person would be finding himself in a similar circumstances, he'd probably be suspended from his job until this matter is resolved one way or the other. Now, this doesn't happen with a valuable footballer because time is of the essence. They can't just now send him on gardening leave for 2 years. It's really complicated, I think, to go one way or the other on this. And even if you do, then you still have this problem, which is increasingly a problem, I think, in football for fans and those in the media, which is to how to separate what happens off the pitch with appreciating and evaluating the performances of teams and of players. Does it matter where the money comes from? Does it matter what they do when they're off the pitch? Does it matter that Ronaldo has admitted to tax evasion and has been already sentenced to prison, which is a suspended sentence? Very, very difficult, and often feel as if the easy way out is to ignore all of that stuff, but it's perhaps not the right way of doing it.
What's the reaction in Italy been, James? No tasteful press release from Juventus this time?
No. To be honest, hasn't received an awful lot of coverage. I would say in some of the papers it's been covering what was this week. I think the day of the news coming out was the Derby d'Italia between Juventus and Inter in Nanjing. The opportunity for Conte and Sarri to play each other, come against each other for the first time, and that's the dominant story on the sort of, you know, be it on the kind of centerfold two-page spread, let's say, in the sports papers. And, you know, I think I wouldn't like to say that they've, in the press, they've wanted this story to go away, but there, I think Raf alluded to it there. There's been a considerable amount of discomfort about having to, you know, how do you toe this line? How do you walk this line in terms of what you focus on? We've seen, particularly when these allegations, when Catherine Mayorga came out publicly, rather than because Der Spiegel had been reporting about this for a couple of years and she was still anonymous at that time, but when she came out publicly, how partisan some of the papers were, particularly one Turin sports paper, Tutto Sport. So I think there has been an element of, yeah, this is a massive opportunity for Serie A to get the spotlight, be able to sell this story, essentially, that Serie A's back because Ronaldo comes, and there's maybe this sense that, okay, now that's hopefully going away. And I think that again, just it's not a particularly nice environment, I think, really, to observe, because I think those allegations need to be taken very seriously. Still, I share Raf's thought on going back and reading everything that came out, because ultimately. Yeah, there are lots of questions I think we have to ask ourselves as a society in this day and age as to how we go on about covering these things.
I would recommend an article that Alex Morgan, the US international, posted the other day on Twitter on vice.com. It's by Brenda Elsie and Jennifer Doyle. Even if you don't agree with all the assumptions and conclusions that they come to, I think it's really, really instructive reading.
Well, we'll be talking more about Ronaldo and other rich footballers in just a moment. But first, it's that point of the show where I get to say producer Ben has been speaking with Paddy Power.
Listeners, it's time to say hello to Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, Matt's been telling us about Chelsea's pre-season earlier on. Give us some numbers, please, on Chelsea being the top club in London, but also perhaps losing their first three games.
The odds aren't too bad. We do think Spurs will finish above them, clearly. But it's 7-4 that Chelsea finishes the top London club. By our odds, we make them fifth in the table come the end of the season. But believe it or not, and I'm not trying to be cruel, this has been a popular special, actually, this. Chelsea, to lose their first three Premier League matches, is 50-1. Obviously, the first game, United, is a knife edge, according to the betting. But Leicester and Norwich after that, you would expect them to win that. A long shot, we think.
And finally, Lee, let's talk about the Championship. And as will become apparent in the rest of the show, let's talk about Leeds. Can they finally get promoted this season?
Yeah, the biggest club in the Championship, according to their fans, and the biggest club in our betting. It's 6-4 Leeds go up this season. They're also the favourites to win the league. You'd expect them to, but that was true at the start of this year, and that didn't turn out great.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. Be gambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Right, you know at the end of the news when Trevor McDonald used to say, and finally tonight, this is that bit of the pod. No mixing up Kent and countryside with hilarious consequences here, though. As you've just heard with Lee Price, we asked about Leeds. Why is that? Well, because they've got their own version of Sunderland Till I Die, except it's all about Leeds. It's called Take Us Home, and it's on Amazon Prime. It'll be about their travels and travails from last season, which fans of the Totally Football League show, which is back next Wednesday, will know all about. They certainly weren't short of material, from Bielsa's bucket to how they flailed and failed to reach the Premier League. And one other thing I can't quite remember. Oh, yes, of course. It's Spygate. What do you both think of these types of documentaries, Rafa? They tend to sort of rarely end well for the club, but can be quite amusing for everybody else.
I think you have to look at each one of them on their own merits. I think it'd be very interesting to see what kind of story arc is there and who is the hero and who's the villain in the piece, etc. There's also one on Dortmund coming out on Amazon as well, first week of August, I think. And there's another one coming out which looks at football in a more broader context, but which kind of looks at Bayern and Eintracht Frankfurt in the prism of their cup final a year ago. So loads of stuff. Unless it brings you sort of a bigger truth about the game, about humanity, it is something that's very much directed at the fans. I know that Leeds have a huge following in the UK, but I think unless you're a Leeds fan, unless you're Bielsa obsessive, I'm not sure, where the interest really lies. How many people are really going to watch it?
Well, you need an element of jeopardy or sort of comic tragedy like you got with the Sunderland one, James, really, don't you? Because the Manchester City one just bored me to tears, frankly, but that Sunderland one was amazing. And you think having Bielsa in there, it gives you a nice lead character, if nothing else.
Yeah, it should do. Yeah, it should be a fascinating character study to be a fly on the wall on a Bielsa team. Absolutely. We often take for granted, I think, in this country that these documentaries are pitched at us in the UK. Who, if you're a Leeds fan, have grown up, know everything about Leeds, follow the minutiae of Leeds, be it online or local paper or whatever. They're not. They're pitched at international audiences. And again, from my experience of just going on tour, the amount of people you talk to in Singapore who just... Again, but they're United fans, Spurs fans. What they just want to consume anything, no matter how anodyne it is, about their team. They want that kind of insight, even when for jaded people like us three, often doesn't really tell us more than what we already know or give us anything sort of interesting. So, but I'm sure that one, I'm sure it'll be gold.
Just on the subject of international fans and audiences, etc. I don't know if you saw this, but at the Derby d'Italia,
yeah,
there were actually
clashes,
yeah, between Chinese fans of Inter and Juve. This is how globalized football has become.
Because Inter fans from China, because they were playing in Nanjing, which is where Inter's owners Su Ning are from, and it was seen as
classic their, Inter territory,
their second home. Essentially, but
Gazzetta come to our turf.
Gazzetta was quite cheekily suggesting today that the Juventus fans outnumbered them in their own thing. And the thing is, Inter fans had unfurled this banner saying, Juve always cheat, Juve always steal. And bottles were thrown. People had to get in between them, separate them. I must say, it was amazing when, again, following Inter in Singapore, hearing Inter fans who'd come from Indonesia and different parts of Asia in particular, who'd learnt the Inter songbook and were singing the Inter chants. That was amazing. Again, if you watch the footage from the Inter-Juventus game in Nanjing, it's even more pronounced. You know, it is, to some extent, a little bit like San Siro. So credit especially to the Inter fans in Indonesia who are have a similar experience with Italian football that we do in the UK, in that Serie A was available on terrestrial TV there. And so they're so much more familiar with it. And they have these super hardcore supporters who, as I said, made that trip.
Who's the Indonesian James Richardson?
Yeah, I have no idea. Maybe it's James Richardson. That's where he ended up for 20 years. But they brought their own choreography, tried to mimic what the Coup de Nord did. Yeah, it was very good. So props to them guys.
Excellent. The Leeds documentary, by the way, as we say, Take Us Home is the title of it.
It's not marching on together.
This is it. Producer Abby has come up with a better one, which is I Spy. I also thought you could have called it Don't Spy for Me, Argentina, or Marching On to an Opponent's Training Ground Without Permission, or No One Likes Us and We Take Umbrage at That. Any of those would have worked. Anyway. And finally, if you thought footballers don't get paid enough, and let's be honest, we've all thought that at one stage or another, what about footballers on Instagram? This is after the influencer rich list was released this week. We'll have some fun. You can try and work out who the top footballing influencers are. For context, Grandad, if you're an influencer, that's someone with a lot of followers on Insta. Companies will pay you to post about their stuff. The more followers you have, by and large, the more companies will pay you to post about their stuff. It's all pretty baffling to me. But the most followed person on Instagram is a footballer. Do you know who that is, James?
Well, I imagine it's Cristiano.
It certainly is. He's got 176 million followers. Rafa, how much do you think he can earn for a single post? I'd like the figure in US dollars, please.
I've actually looked at this in preparation for the show, so maybe you should ask James.
Okay, James.
In dollars?
Yeah.
$1 million?
$975,000 per post. In at number two, you know who the second biggest footballing influencer is?
Yeah, I'm actually trying to think. Neymar.
Neymar is correct. 121 million followers. Did you see how much he gets per post, Rafa?
Was it 700 and something, 758?
722 per post. Messi's got 2 million but, more followers, I mean, but gets less per post.
Maybe I'm a bit cynical, but how do these numbers come about?
I don't know.
The dollars or the actual followers?
The followers we know, but the numbers seem a bit weird. It's like, okay, I will make this post for you, but I won $722,000 from you.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, I think it's probably just an average, isn't it? Messi next on 648,000 per post. David Beckham is at number four. That's David Beckham, who retired from playing 6 years ago.
It's David Beckham.
He gets $357,000 per post, and I'm starting to feel a bit queasy at this. Fifth place, bit of an eyebrow raiser. Any idea? Another retired footballer? He's got 47 million followers and recently did a post about Bitcoin. Other cryptocurrencies are available and equally incomprehensible.
To be honest, the only social media post by a football past or present that caught my attention this year and has been seared into my consciousness ever since was the Eric Cantona egg one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So not. I mean, I wonder how much he got paid for that.
Yeah, not enough. Ronaldinho, by the way, was number five, 256 grand for an Instagram post for him. I've got 345 followers. Here's Matty D. Any big company or big wigs listening, get in touch. I can help you increase your brand's reach to a whole new audience, brackets my mum. Well, now that we all feel a bit poor, it's time to work out how we can become influencers. We're off to take photos outside pretty walls on the beach and holding a can of water or whatever it is that influencers do. Thanks to Raph and James for your company in the studio. Listener, thank you for your company right to the very end. And if I could leave you with some parting advice, it would be this. Wear sunscreen. If only I could offer you one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proven by scientists. Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.